Welcome to Talking to the Professors at Austin Health.
Hello, welcome to the Austin Hospitals podcast series. I'm Professor Jeffrey Zajac. I'm head of the Division of Medicine at the Austin and Professor of Medicine at the University of Melbourne. I'd like to introduce Professor Samuel Berkovic, who is head of the epilepsy service at the Austin and also has an appointment at the University of Melbourne. And today we're going to talk about epilepsy. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Epilepsy is a disease which is not very well understood by the general public. It seems to be not that common, but perhaps it's more common than we think.
Indeed it is, and perhaps 3% of the population will have epilepsy at some time in their life. Often it's relatively mild and transient, but some people are quite severely affected and it can be a lifelong problem. One of the reasons that it's not well known is that people with epilepsy have often been subject of discrimination, prevented from getting jobs, even in some cultures being prevented from marrying. So this has led to an undercurrent that it's something that you don't talk about, something that we're very much trying to change.
A lot of people might be scared of a person with epilepsy because they see they're shaking and out of control. Is that a common thing?
It is, unfortunately, a common reaction, and you may see somebody who appears to be quite normal and then suddenly is literally seized. And unfortunately, sometimes they're regarded as drunk or intoxicated with alcohol or drugs, which of course they're not. And it behoves all of us to be aware of what these phenomena are and to look after the person appropriately if it happens in the street.
So what should you do if this happens in front of you?
You should basically stop the person injuring themselves simply by moving things away, making sure there's nothing sharp under their pockets, making sure their airway is maintained, and calling for help if it's prolonged by getting an ambulance.
In the good old days, it used to be said you would put a spoon in their mouth and some other things. We still do that?
No, that's good at knocking people's teeth out, but not actually good at helping them, and one specifically doesn't do that. And you just turn the person on their side, make sure they don't block their airway, and the person will nearly always spontaneously recover.
And how long is it likely to go on for?
Typically about a minute.
So there are some good treatments for epilepsy available. How good is the treatment nowadays?
Well, epilepsy treatments come a long way. There are a large number of drug treatments which are often very effective, and probably of the order of 70% of people can either be successfully controlled or Mother Nature takes its course and it actually goes away by itself. But there is unfortunately a group of 20 to 30% of people who are more challenging to treat, who have ongoing seizures and in whom it still provides a challenge for research and treatment. In some of those people, surgical treatment's appropriate, and centres like the Austin offer surgical treatment for a small proportion of people, which can be extremely successful. But that's really a last resort step. But there are many new drugs. There are new drugs appearing on the pipeline. We have an active research program into new anti-epileptic drugs. So, in fact, there's a lot of hope.
So how do you go about finding out the cause for a disease like this?
Okay, well, I mean, in an individual person, a series of largely non-invasive investigations are now appropriate, particularly scanning of the brain, and our ability to understand what's going on in the brain has increased enormously over the last 10 to 15 years, particularly through the use of MRI. And we have a large research facility at the Brain Research Institute, now the Florey Neurosciences Institute, affiliated with the university, where very high-level investigations can be done. And we're really discovering much, much more about what's actually going on in the brain in an individual with epilepsy.
So if you do an MRI of somebody with epilepsy, is their brain abnormal?
It's in many cases still, perhaps about half, the brain looks normal as best we can interrogate it with the MRI. But compared to 20 or 30 years ago, when the majority of people had normal tests by the standard of tests we had then, quite a number now we can pick up subtle abnormalities, and that really changes the game in terms of understanding why they've got epilepsy and how we might approach it from many points of view.
Now, in patients with epilepsy, other than the epilepsy, are they otherwise normal or do
yes,
they have
in
other
general,
problems?
They're broadly of the normal intellect. They broadly have the same frequency of other problems. For example, mental health problems were something that were often thought to always go with epilepsy, and they certainly don't. Epilepsy does put a lot of stress on people and they may have much more anxiety or whatever, but otherwise they're regular folk.
So sometimes epilepsy runs in the family. How common is that?
Indeed it does. And why it runs in families and the genetics of epilepsy is also a major focus of our research. And we actually think the familial causes of epilepsy are far greater than have hitherto been appreciated. And our group was responsible for actually discovering the first gene for epilepsy back in 1995. And we've continued to be leaders in that area internationally. And it's now appearing that the genes are indeed much more important than has been previously thought. And we're discovering a raft of genes that are responsible or contributing to epilepsy.
So what percentage of people with epilepsy would have a genetic or family cause?
Well, we think at least half would have a major genetic contribution to their epilepsy, and even the remainder, there are probably minor factors that are inherited that influence the condition.
So let's say we know the gene for a particular type of epilepsy. How does that help us with the treatment or the diagnosis or...
Well, it helps us enormously with the diagnosis because at least in a group of patients with epilepsy, the specific gene is associated with a specific form of epilepsy that then leads to a specific treatment. At the moment, it's fair to say that's still a minority of cases. The dream in this field and in genetics generally is when one finds the gene, one then can develop a rational treatment. That pathway has taken a lot longer to achieve than we initially thought, and there's still some way to go. So we can't promise novel treatments yet based on genetic discoveries, but we hope that will come.
Let's say you test a person in the family who has epilepsy and you find an abnormality in their DNA. What do you do next?
Okay, well, in a small proportion of cases, that would lead to specific counselling implications. For example, if it was a particularly severe form of epilepsy, then the individuals who might be of childbearing age could start to get some informed decisions made as to, A, whether they wish to have children, and normally the answer is yes, and one wouldn't advise them against, but they may have the opportunity of having the embryo tested for particularly severe forms of epilepsy. Now, at the moment, that's rare, but that is one direct spin-off of genetic research more generally. For most of the genetic epilepsies, the epilepsy is actually relatively mild. So specific genetic testing early in pregnancy is generally not appropriate. But as we find out the causes of some of the more severe epilepsies, it may become increasingly important in routine practice.
So why do people have these abnormalities in their DNA? Is that just something that starts or it runs in the family or... Why does this occur?
When we think about a genetic disease, we think about something that runs in families. Heart disease runs in families and high blood pressure, etc. And we think for the most part these are changes in the DNA that are transmitted through the family line. But in fact, as we're learning more and more about genetics of common diseases, we're learning that some changes in DNA happen de novo. By that I mean the parents don't have it and then something has happened either in the sperm or in the egg cells, and the child gets the disorder, and therefore it doesn't run in the family but can still be genetic. And that's extremely important, and that relates to my earlier comment that changes in genes are probably far more important for the causation of disease than we previously thought.
Now, you mentioned at the beginning that in a small percentage of these patients they require surgery on their brain. How do you know which part of the brain to take out?
Surgery for epilepsy is not a new thing. It's been done since the 1930s, but has got a lot more sophisticated.
Is it getting any better?
Yeah, the results are slowly getting better. It's important to emphasise that it should only be used in people with severe epilepsy, and amongst those with severe epilepsy at the moment, only a small fraction are suitable for epilepsy surgery, because failed surgery is probably worse than no surgery at all. But with our modern imaging techniques and our modern EEG techniques and the things that are on the cutting edge that we're using routinely at the Austin, and new things that we're developing, our ability to find where the epilepsy is coming in the brain is getting increasingly more sophisticated. And we carefully follow up our patients and really try to identify factors that will allow us to predict which patients will do well and which ones will not do so well. So we're getting better at selecting cases, and I think our results are getting better.
So we've talked a lot about current approaches to epilepsy. What do you think's coming in the future?
Well, I hope that there'll be new drugs and that there'll be drugs that sort of act in a different way to the ones that we have now. I think there'll be much more sophisticated surgical approaches to epilepsy. And I hope that we'll have ways of preventing epilepsy by understanding its basic causes, particularly its genetic causes and other causes, so that we can intervene early, because there is some evidence that at least in some cases epilepsy can be a progressive problem, and the earlier one intervenes the better.
Do you think there are a lot more genes to come, or we know them all already?
No, I think there's a lot more to come, and the genetic landscape of epilepsy is a lot more complicated than we first envisaged when we embarked on this. In fact, we might not have embarked on it had we known how complicated it might be.
Well, on that positive note, maybe we'll stop now, and thank you.
That was Talking with the Professors at Austin Health.